Pacific Gas and Electric, the primary utility provider in the Central Valley, filed for bankruptcy last month. The company is on the hook for liability over many of the state's wildfires last year. Beyond PG&E's financial problems, however, is the question of what this means for the renewable energy industry. It contracts with PG&E and the state's goal to rely on 100% clean energy by 2045. To find out more, I caught up with Lauren Summer, who covers science for member station KQED. Lauren, thank you so much for being with us, first of all.
Hi, thanks.
So you've been doing some reporting on how PG&E's bankruptcy declaration would affect the state's renewable energy, but let's back up for a second. How does this even work? You know, does PG&E even generate solar energy itself?
Yeah, the way it works is, you know, a long time ago now, more than a decade ago, California passed laws that required more renewable energy be put on the grid. And this was back when solar energy in particular was pretty expensive. It was kind of still the early days. But those laws and, you know, governor after governor, this is Governor Schwarzenegger back then, would get up and say, we want to see more renewables. The responsibility actually falls to electric utilities like PG&E. So when those laws were passed, PG&E had to go out and sign a lot of contracts with solar power providers and wind power providers to actually get that energy onto the grid.
Gotcha. Okay, so they have contracts with other solar providers. That's how it works. And so I know the state has some pretty ambitious goals regarding renewable energy, most recently SB 100, which says that 100% of the state's electricity has to come from renewable or emissions-free sources by 2045. And so how does or how would bankruptcy throw a wrench in all of those plans for the state?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is no one's really sure yet, and that's why people are getting a little bit nervous. A bankruptcy judge has a lot of power, and so in this bankruptcy proceeding, the judge is going to have to be looking at, well, who does PG&E owe money to, and then they have to figure out who should they pay and in what order. And so obviously, these solar power and wind power renewable energy companies are some of those entities that PG&E owes money to through these contracts. And when PG&E signed these contracts, I mean, they're for 15 or 20 years at a time. They're agreeing to buy some of this electricity from them. So the nervousness from the renewable energy companies comes from the fact that a judge could look at them and say, I will pay you 50 cents on the dollar, or maybe let's just renegotiate some of these contracts. And no one's really sure, but it's really been enough to send some ripples through that industry.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of discretion from a judge. And so what, if anything, can renewable energy companies do to protect themselves?
Yeah, you know, in this case, it's gotten kind of interesting. We've seen, right after this happened, a handful of renewable energy projects had their credit ratings downgraded because of their link with PG&E. And, you know, no business wants to see that. And so we've seen a couple of renewable energy companies kind of go on the offensive a little bit. Instead of just kind of waiting to see what a bankruptcy judge would decide, they actually went to the federal government, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to try to get them involved. They said, you know, hey, you've got jurisdiction over some of these interstate power contracts and power agreements. So we want you to intervene in this case and say that the federal government should have to approve any changes to these power contracts. So kind of they were looking to get someone else involved in the fight to maybe protect them slightly. And what we probably are going to see is just a very big jurisdictional fight between this bankruptcy judge, between the federal government. And then, of course, the state has another big stake in this whole proceeding as well.
Wow. And while this is all playing out with the bankruptcy proceedings, I think maybe we should note that consumers who have PG&E, which is a lot of the Central Valley, you know, it's not like we're going to lose power. This really impacts the way the company will operate. And like you said, the state's ability to move forward with renewable energy. But turning from electricity and gas to a different natural resource, I also wanted to ask you about water. So last week, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation came out with a new biological opinion regarding the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project, which essentially provide water to farmers and municipalities in the Central Valley and also other parts of the state. But they haven't done that in a long time, so this is pretty significant, but it's also a huge document. So I don't know, big picture view here, what could a new biological opinion mean? What's in there?
Yeah, I know this sounds very complicated and wonky, but it's actually incredibly, incredibly important. And I'll tell you why. People hear a lot about fish versus farms, right? We kind of see signs around all over the place, and there's a lot of contention. Most of the time, what people are talking about when they say that is these environmental rules in the Delta that are meant to protect endangered salmon and endangered Delta smelt. And the way those rules work currently is that sometimes of year, in some years, they limit the amount of water that can be pumped out of the Delta in order to protect those fish, essentially, you know, to prevent killing them. And the idea is to prevent them from going completely extinct. So these are the biological opinions. That's what these rules are. The last time that they were written was in 2008 and 2009. They were incredibly controversial. The litigation dragged on and on and on because so many people were fighting over them. And for good reason. I mean, there's a lot of water at stake here. There's people's jobs at stake. There's, you know, the future of endangered species at stake. And so now we are seeing the next version being written, and the controversy, of course, is very intense all over again.
And so I guess what could be the impacts ultimately? Might it mean that farmers get less water? I understand that, you know, because protecting a lot of these fish and certain endangered species has to do with lawsuits. So they kind of have to do the bare minimum to keep those going along, as far as I know. But is that like ultimately what could happen, is just municipalities and farmers get the short end of the stick or not?
Well, this time around, it's a little bit different. You know, when President Trump came to the Central Valley when he was campaigning, you know, he promised more water for agriculture, right? And we've seen, you know, some other memorandums written trying to ordering the Interior Department to maximize water supplies. You know, we haven't actually seen those things happen. But this might be the first instance where we actually see them acting on that promise, which is what came out is from the Bureau of Reclamation. Basically, it's their proposal for how these environmental rules will work. And they are proposing to increase water deliveries through the two big water projects, the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project. This is just their proposal, though. And what happens now is that the federal wildlife agencies, which is the Fish and Wildlife Service and then the National Marine Fisheries Service, take what the Bureau of Reclamation has proposed, and they're going to write their versions for the final biological opinions, the final environmental rules. So we won't really know until we actually see those final documents. But certainly what we've seen from this first document is that the Department of the Interior is trying to maybe fulfill that promise that the president made.
And we also know that the Department of Interior is now headed by someone from the Valley, from Westlands Water District. So that might, I guess, affect things as well. Sorry.
People are really certainly looking for that, right? Because they know that there's been a close connection between who's, you know, the acting secretary, David Bernhardt, right? And he was a lobbyist for Westlands Water District. And so I think there are a lot of people that are really keeping their eye on, do we see something from that relationship?
Right. And you mentioned the last time a biological opinion came out, it took a long time. And so I guess, how long are we talking here before some sort of a decision gets made with this one? Do you think it'll be years or just months, or what might that look like?
So the final biological opinions are supposed to come out 135 days from when the Bureau of Reclamation released it recently. And that actually comes from the top. I mean, President Trump sent out a memorandum in the fall ordering that it happen in 135 days. But that's very fast, actually, for a decision of this caliber. I mean, the one we just saw from the Bureau of Reclamation, what I think is like over 3,000 pages, and I don't think I've even opened every document that was part of it. So they're definitely trying to move this along quickly. There's concern from environmental groups that that is not enough time to wade through the very complex science and the very complex decision-making that has to go on with this. So it's definitely going to happen quickly. And then that's maybe when the lawsuits would start, and then who knows how long that would take.
Wow. And I'm sure as all of this happens, we will keep looking to you for your reporting on it. Lauren Sommer, science reporter at KQED, thank you so much for speaking with us.
No problem. Thanks.